The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Thanks to Richard Palmer for filling in yesterday while I caught up on some other work. I didn't catch all of his program, but the parts that I did catch, I particularly enjoyed the little diversion about pirates. Very informative. So hopefully he can come back and flesh that out a little bit more, even. If you'd like to email the program, you can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. I don't think we'll have time to get into any of the feedback today, but hopefully on tomorrow's program we can wrap up the week with a few of your comments. So send those messages in, td@kpcg.fm. So Donald Trump lost the popular vote, it looks like by about a million votes. But at the same time, as everyone I think in America knows, he easily won the Electoral College because he broke through the Democrats' formidable blue wall, as they call it. He got narrow victories in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin, these states that typically lean to the left. And of course, these states during the early part of the 20th century, these states were part of America's booming manufacturing belt. But after decades, when you look back at the end of the 20th century and, of course, these first years of the following century, after decades of factory shutdowns and population loss and urban decay, today this region is now known as the decaying Rust Belt. That's the tag that it has, the Rust Belt. And throughout the campaign, Donald Trump repeatedly promised that he'd bring jobs to these areas. He was out on the campaign trail saying that America was getting ripped off on trade, particularly with China and Mexico. He promised to either repeal or to redo trade deals. He talked about slapping tariffs on imports coming from nations that cheat. He even said he'd penalize U.S. companies that close down factories in the States so that they could move those factories abroad and take advantage of cheap labor and then take advantage of free trade when sending their products back to America. He was out there saying over and again, particularly in those Rust Belt states, that he was going to bring factory jobs back to their states. And of course, the disaffected working class voters in states like Pennsylvania and Michigan, they loved that message. They cheered that message. I've got a few clips here from one of his stump speeches. Well, actually from a couple. But this first one here, it comes from a speech he gave it actually in New Jersey. He had just gone through some factories in New York, and he talks here in this speech about Pennsylvania and some of those Rust Belt states. And here's what Donald Trump had to say. This is clip one.
We are going to make the great trade deals out of absolute disgusting, the worst ever negotiated by any country ever in the world. That's how bad they are. They're taking our jobs. They're taking our money. They're taking everything. I'll tell you what to me the most interesting was, because I love New York. I know New York. But I actually really toured this state like I never did before. I went up to Albany, and I went up to Syracuse, and I went up to Rome. That's Rome, New York. That's the real Rome, right? I went up to Rome, and I went out to the island to Bethpage and Suffolk, John Laval and Joe and all these guys, and we did so great. But I looked at factories, and I looked at buildings that were absolutely terrible to look at. They were crumbling, and you could see 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you could see vibrance. And today you could buy them for $2. I mean, I looked at places, and then I went to Pennsylvania, and I looked at places, and by the way, in Pennsylvania, a week before, we have Hillary saying that she's going to put the miners and the coal mines out of business, okay? And I said, when I won New York, it was interesting. I said, we're going to put the miners back to work. I don't even know why I said it. And a few weeks later, I went to West Virginia. You want to see good numbers. I really had good numbers in West Virginia. And I didn't say it for that reason. But we're going to put people back to work.
That's Donald Trump from the month of May, several months ago. And before he got, I think, his new staff, his new campaign manager, when he was really just speaking off the cuff and speaking with a lot of energy. Now they're trying to make him much more presidential, and he's coming across a lot more subdued and calmer, I guess you could say. But it's interesting just going back and listening to these stump speeches from the Republican primary, because when he got on the subject of trade, I mean, that he was right in his wheelhouse. He knows the economy. He knows trade. And he told the crowds, look, just trust me on this. I've got friends in high places that are dealing with China and other nations, and we're getting ripped off. They're cheating us. They're taking away our jobs. They're taking our money. They're taking everything. And it was this message that enabled Donald Trump to peel away working class votes from these Democratic strongholds like Michigan and Pennsylvania. And it was this message at the same time that pretty much aligned with the stump speeches of Bernie Sanders, which is why Mr. Trump went out to Bernie Sanders supporters or reached out to them after Sanders dropped out of the race. This same speech he gave, this is clip two, as he begins to talk now more about what he's going to do to these nations abroad to ensure that we get jobs back in the United States. This is clip two.
We're going to take our jobs back, and we're going to use our power, including our power of taxation. When a company moves to Mexico and they think they're going to drop out, like Carrier, like Ford, like Nabisco, they think they're going to take our people, fire all of our people, move to Mexico, make their air conditioners, and sell them right across the border. No tax, no nothing. Guess what, folks? Not going to work that way anymore.
Not going to work that way anymore. So if he went on to talk about this scenario, if companies from the U.S. close down their factories at home and then they move them to, let's say, Mexico, again, taking advantage of the cheap labor down there, and then the free trade to bring those products back to the States, he said that these companies are going to be penalized with a 35% tariff added to every unit that they sell back to the United States. And he explained that, well, this is a win-win situation because this tariff will prevent companies from wanting to move their factories. And then if they do move their factories, well, it's just going to generate a lot of income for the United States, this 35% tariff or this 35% tax. Here's how Donald Trump said he would handle, again, though I kind of paraphrased, but here's some detail that he goes into about what steps he's going to take with these U.S. companies that consider moving their factories. This is clip three.
I'm going to say to them, you want to move your plant, enjoy Mexico. It's a wonderful place, beautiful weather. I hope you like 120 degrees. It's wonderful. But here's what you're going to do. Every unit you make that you sell into the United States, you're going to pay a 35% tax, okay? 35, very simple. Very simple. Now, here's what's going to happen. Now, some conservatives would say that's not free market. I mean, we're losing our shirts, folks. We're losing our jobs. We don't have a choice. So here's what's going to do. If I saw Carrier before they move, in other words, I want to get in there quickly because I'm going to call them fast. They haven't moved yet. But before they moved, I'd say, you move, enjoy yourself. You're going to pay a 35% tax. They're not moving. They're not going to move. It's very simple. They're not moving. Now, if it's too late, they move, I'm charging these companies some tax because you know what? We're getting killed. We're losing all of our jobs. We're losing everything. So at least the United States is going to make a hell of a lot of money.
At least the U.S. will make a lot of money because he's going to charge these companies a tax. Of course, who pays that in the end? The companies get charged the tax. They have to raise the price on their products. they come back to the United States, and of course, it's the American consumer that has to pay that price, that tax. We'll come back to that point a little bit later. But this was the popular message. You can hear the crowd. I mean, these were applause lines. How he's going to keep companies from going down to Mexico. Same thing with China. They're ripping us off. And Donald Trump's going to change that by slapping huge, huge tariffs on Chinese goods coming into the United States. There was a story earlier this year. The New York Times reported this, an interview that it had with Donald Trump. This is back in January, and according to this printed report, this interview, Mr. Trump said that he would add tariffs. He said, "Well, I'm a free trader, yes, but it's got to be fair." And so, to quote what he said in the Times, "I would do a tax, and the tax, let me tell you what the tax should be. The tax should be 45%. 45%." On all Chinese goods coming into the United States. Well, this subject came up in one of the Republican debates also in January, and he backed away from that 45% to some extent and was pressed on it in this exchange. Here's what he had to say, clip 4.
China is ripping us on trade. They're devaluing their currency, and they're killing our companies. Thousands and thousands, you look at the number of companies and the number in terms of manufacturing and plants that we've lost, 50,000 because of China.
So now, you never advocated putting a tariff on their goods to punish?
We've lost anywhere between 4 and 7 million jobs because of China. What I said this, we have very unfair trade with China. We're going to have a trade deficit of $505 billion this year with China. A lot of that is because they devalue their currency. What I said to the New York Times is that we have great power, economic power over China. And if we wanted to use that, and the amount, and where the 45% comes in, that would be the amount based on their devaluations that we should get. What I'm saying is this. I'm not saying we do it. But if they don't start treating us fairly and stop devaluing and let their currency rise so that our companies can compete and we don't lose all of these millions of jobs that we're losing, I would certainly start taxing goods that come in from China.
That was during a debate in January. And as I say, this came up in I think, every speech, every stump speech, certainly the ones where he's going through those states like Pennsylvania and Michigan. But here he is saying that he's going to add 45%. That's a huge tariff added to Chinese goods. 35%. 35% tariff on U.S. companies building their units abroad in Mexico and then sending them back. And then, I mean, these are pretty radical extreme measures. And what if these extreme measures lead to a massive trade war with Mexico or with China? Or with Japan, or with the European Union? What if it leads to a trade war? Well, he brought that up in that same stump speech from New Jersey. This is clip 5.
And these dummies say, oh, well, that's a trade war. Trade war? We're losing $500 billion in trade with China. Who the hell cares if there's a trade war? Trade war? It's crazy.
Who cares if there's a trade war? These were the applause lines at Trump rallies. These kinds of statements generated the most applause. It's a popular message that scores a lot of points, particularly with the working class voters in the Rust Belt. But the question is, what kind of an impact will this anti-free trade platform have on the rest of America or on America's position and standing in the world at large? Now you say, well, these were just big campaign promises, and maybe some of it was overblown, and typically a lot of commentators have said they meet in the middle. And China even responded when it came back with its threats, saying that, well, this is what will happen if he follows through with this. We'll go through with this and this and this. But we think it's just campaign rhetoric. Well, we'll see. Later on in the program, we'll get more into what God has to say about trade war. I mean, we know where this is going. It's like a perfect storm. is coming on us. Now, you look back at some of our recent history, since the, it wasn't this way before World War II, but since the end of World War II, pretty much every American presidential administration has worked to expand free trade. Free trade. Now, just because it's free doesn't always mean it's fair, and that's one thing that Trump brought out in that that debate. And you go back to a few statements that Ronald Reagan made in the 80s about free trade. He stressed, too, that it has to be fair and that there are certain steps that the United States has to take to ensure that it's fair. But he really promoted free trade. And really, if you look at some of the unfair practices going on, I think it's safe to say Donald Trump was quite right in exposing the unfair trading practices of America's trading partners, particularly with the way China manipulates its currency and does it to give its exporting goods, well, to give those exporting the goods to the United States and elsewhere, just a massive advantage. If China's currency keeps losing value, and they'll do it purposefully, then that just makes their goods that much cheaper for us to buy. And so then Americans buy it up. And they enjoy the cheap goods, the consumer, that is. And really, if you look at what China and some other nations are doing, and we've written about this at thetrumpet.com, the undeniable truth is that the United States is already in the midst of a trade war. And you could argue that Donald Trump is essentially saying it's time to fight back. And that's what a lot of people thought on the campaign trail. Yeah, it's about time we do something. We've been cheated all these years. It's a message that that a lot of Americans support right now. But here again, we've got to keep coming back to the big picture here and get God's perspective. Where is this leading? That's the question. Donald Trump, he said it there in that debate. He thinks America has all the leverage with China. Is he right? He says we're holding all the cards. Is he right about that? What if he's wrong? What if he's wrong, and what if his anti-trade platform results in a massive escalation in this war? Where will that lead? Well, as I said, with respect to Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s, he did say, look, we've got to act when nations are cheating. But he said there are positive, result-oriented actions that the United States can take when those trading partners attempt to gain an unfair advantage. But he said slapping on stiff tariffs and making high trade barriers or putting up high trade barriers, that's not the way to level the playing field. He said that protectionist trade strategy, he said it was destructive, actually. And again, this is just some fairly recent history that I think helps to keep this subject in perspective. In 1986, Reagan, he vetoed this trade barrier bill coming out of the House, I believe it was, that would have saved tens of thousands of jobs in the textile industry. But as Reagan pointed out on one of his radio broadcasts, he said that it would have cost American consumers $44 billion. And so when it comes to trade deals, there's always a trade-off, no pun intended. Okay, so you save the textile industry, or you save jobs in the textile industry, but then the American consumers have to pick up the tab. $44 billion. Reagan said these temporarily protected jobs would be more than offset by the loss of thousands of other jobs. Jobs in retail, marketing, and finance, and jobs directly related to importing, such as dock workers and transportation workers. And then there are all those who would be thrown out of work as we begin to feel the effects of foreign retaliation. And you can bet there would be retaliation, Reagan said. Yes, there will be retaliation. That's the thing that I think is rather short-sighted. I mean, to get up and, yeah, okay, people are clapping, but to say, who cares if there's a trade war? 45%, 35%? Okay, if you go through with that, what will be their response? That's the thing. There will be retaliation. Just a simple understanding of human nature informs us of that. Mark Hendrickson, he wrote a piece at the Conservative Review back in June 2016. He said, those who believe that it is more important to save American businesses and jobs than to raise standards of living for consumers through lower prices ignore the fact that protectionist measures do not save American jobs on a net basis. He said protectionist measures tend to save some American jobs at the expense of other American jobs. And he goes and gives an example. President Bush, back in 2002, when he slapped tariffs on the steel-producing industry. Well, the steel companies in the U.S., they were struggling at that time. Thomas Sowell writes about this in his book, Basic Economics. When you get to the bottom line and you see, okay, what's the net result here? Sowell says steel tariffs produced $240 million in additional profits to steel companies and saved 5,000 jobs in the steel industry. Well, hooray for the steel industry. They saved all those jobs. They increased their profits. But Sowell says, but those American industries that manufacture products made from this artificially more expensive steel lost an estimated $600 million in profits and 26,000 jobs. And so the steel workers were happy in 2002, 2003. But there's quite a few American workers in other industries that were quite unhappy and laid off from work. You can tack tariffs on to steel coming into the United States from other countries that make it more cheaply. Then the prices go up, helps the steel companies. But for other American companies, it really, really hurts. Louis Jacobson, he wrote a piece September 12th, just a month or two ago, talking about just the exports versus imports, the trade deficit, in other words. He said, while U.S. exports in 2015, they were $2.3 trillion last year, our exports, America's exports. He says, while that was exceeded by $2.8 trillion in imports, producing roughly a $500 billion trade deficit, imports themselves support jobs in the United States. What he's saying is that even with a trade imbalance, and again, there's some negatives to that for sure, but even with a trade imbalance, if there's a lot pouring into the United States, there's a big industry there of American workers who are bringing those imports in. It says, and the lower prices from imported products enable Americans to enjoy a better standard of living than they would otherwise. So it benefits the American consumer as well. But going back to just the jobs associated with imports, he said that 11.6 million U.S. jobs directly depend on trade. Now, that's probably for imports and exports. But still, you have to, as Reagan tried to do, you have to step back and look at the big picture. Going back to Mark Hendrickson, in his piece at Conservative Review, he said the reality is that protectionism does not prevent job loss, but simply redistributes job losses. Redistribution of wealth, you could say. Tariffs and other government trade barriers determine which workers and businesses are the winners and which are the losers, which is why trade policy is such a hot-button political issue. It's worth remarking that under socialism, governments pick winners and losers, which is why 19th century economist Frederick Bastiat described protectionism as the first step towards socialism. These kinds of protectionist policies, they sound great. They really do sound great out on the campaign trail. But the reality is, it's just another way to make government bigger. It doesn't make America great again. It makes government bigger. High tariffs, that just creates more government. That just increases the centralization of power in Washington. Now, you know, those people sitting in those audiences, you can sympathize with them. Driving by those factories every day, emptied out, urban decay, the population decline. Look at Detroit. Look at other cities all across that Rust Belt. You can sympathize with them saying, yeah, well, we need to fight back. We need to even out the playing field. Hendrickson says, as it is, our government first cripples American competitiveness through burdensome taxes and regulations, and then throws them a consolation bone by protecting them from foreign competitors. This is layering error upon error. See, the whole system, you could say, is rigged against the factories, the companies. All of this taxation, and let's be honest, that's the reason a lot of companies are moving their factories. Okay, there's something to be said for cheap labor in Mexico and China, too. But if they're paying exorbitant taxes in the United States, you talk about incentive to keep them here, to keep them in the U.S. As it is, it's layer upon layer of error after error. Taxation, regulation, and now high tariffs and trade barriers are going to solve the problem? He concludes his piece, instead of this tired old agenda of big government, we need a freedom agenda. Freedom from taxation, freedom from excessive regulation, freedom for Americans to produce and trade. Such an agenda will invigorate American businesses, produce a thriving job market, and raise Americans' standard of living. Freedom agenda. I mean, that's what America used to stand for. Smaller government, more freedom for the individual, more freedom for the businesses, American businesses, more freedom in the job market. Going back to Reagan and what he said in 1985, he said the balance of trade has become a very emotional issue. Some claim our trade deficit has cost us millions of jobs. Congress is awash in bills calling for trade sanctions and retaliation. But look at the facts, Reagan said. In 1980, we had a trade surplus, and about 99 million Americans had jobs. Today, we have a trade deficit. This is 6 years later. Today, we have a trade deficit, and almost 107 million Americans are working. Despite a growing trade deficit, we've gained over 7.5 million new jobs since 1980. Now, some blue-collar workers could come back and say, well, were those jobs in factories? Maybe not. Maybe a lot of them were in the service industry. In any event, a trade deficit doesn't always mean job losses for Americans. Now, this brings up a whole nother subject. I can't get into everything here today, because to be sure, America is losing factories, and it is losing jobs. We see those numbers, it seems, every month. How many millions of Americans are just no longer in the workforce? I mean, it's getting bad. It's getting bad, and you have to give some credit to Donald Trump for being out there and sounding the alarm. But here again, what if Donald Trump's anti-free trade platform, what if it makes matters worse? What if it leads to a massive global trade war, like what we had in the 1930s? President Reagan, in 1985, he said, our free, open, and growing economy has put more Americans to work in 1985 than ever before in our history. We've created more jobs in the last 3 years than Europe and Japan combined. The surest way to destroy those jobs and to throw Americans out of work is to start a trade war. Trade war? Who cares? Donald Trump said earlier this year. Well, that's not the kind of subject you just want to throw around and say it doesn't much matter. He should care, and so should you. Because if that's what this leads to, and later on in the program, I'll get into that, because as I say, God has something to say on this subject, then we better be prepared for what's coming. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email the program as we come up to the end of this week. Just one more broadcast tomorrow before we finish up. You can send your messages to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
And these dummies say, oh, well, that's a trade war. Trade war? We're losing $500 billion in trade with China. Who the hell cares if there's a trade war? Trade war. It's crazy.
It's a message that comes across pretty good in Flint, Michigan. But you do have to wonder how that message is received in Beijing or in Tokyo or Mexico City, Berlin. How are these trading partners, how do they receive that kind of a message? He's now the president of the United States, or he will be in a couple of months, the president-elect. He gave another speech in June. He talked here about, again, what steps he would take as president to just make the playing field more level. This is clip six.
I'm going to direct the Secretary of Commerce to identify every violation of trade agreements a foreign country is currently using to harm you, the American worker. I will then direct all appropriate agencies to use every tool under American and international law to end these abuses.
Every tool imaginable, including 45% tariffs, massive trade barriers, sticking it to American companies. If they even think about leaving the United States, and if they do leave, penalizing them. The Australian Business Review just last week said U.S. Bank Citigroup says in a research note that while Trump's policies might be good for U.S. growth in the short term, the global impact of a tit-for-tat trade war would be catastrophic. The global impact, it says a U.S.-led, it's quoting someone here, I think it's quoting from the bank's report from Chase, a U.S.-led trade war is a material downside risk for the global economy, which could easily trigger a global recession. In our view, the election outcome significantly increases the risks around the global macroeconomic outlook, including for inflation and future Fed policy. So definite, some definite risks here if he follows through on this policy. And it was one of his more popular messages all throughout the campaign. One more clip here from his June 28th comments on trade. This is clip 7.
I'm going to instruct my Treasury Secretary to label China a currency manipulator, which should have been done years ago. Any country that devalues their currency in order to take unfair advantage of the United States, which is many countries, will be met with sharply. And that includes tariffs and taxes.
Makes for an excellent, campaign speech. And a lot of what he's saying there is true about the cheating that goes on, the currency manipulation, and so on. Robert Morley and others, Tim Thompson years ago, wrote about this for the Trumpet. or at thetrumpet.com. But again, how will this protectionist platform be perceived abroad? That's the thing. And what happens when America's competitors retaliate? Because as Ronald Reagan said, you can bet there will be retaliation. How would there not be retaliation? Just knowing human nature, knowing what it says in the Bible, knowing what it says in James 4 and verse 1, from whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? Donald Trump wants to get what's best for America. America first. Well, what does China want? What does Mexico want? What does Germany want? This highlights the problem with this world. CNBC, just last week, China fires back. Says Apple iPhones and other U.S. goods could suffer sales hits in China if President-elect Donald Trump goes through with his naive plan of slapping a large import tariff on Chinese products, a state-backed newspaper warned on Sunday. That state-backed newspaper in China, they're the ones that use the word naive. It says here later, during his election campaign this year, Trump spoke of a 45% import tariff on all Chinese goods while failing to outline how it would work. Should any such policy come into effect, China will take a tit-for-tat approach. According to an opinion piece in the Global Times, a newspaper backed by the Communist Party. And then it quotes from the piece, a batch of Boeing orders will be replaced by Airbus. U.S. auto and iPhone sales in China will suffer a setback, and U.S. soybean and maize imports will be halted. China can also limit the number of Chinese students studying in the U.S., the article read. It says, as an example of earlier tariff tit-for-tats, the Global Times pointed toward the 35% tariffs imposed in 2009 on Chinese tires. China retaliated with its own tariffs on U.S. car parts and chicken. And it says here, both China and the U.S. suffered losses as a result. From then on, the Obama administration waged no trade war against China. The Global Times in China said, if Trump imposes a 45% tariff on Chinese imports, China-U.S. trade will be paralyzed. Now, the point that Trump was out there on the campaign, this was more in interviews, when interviewers would ask him, well, wouldn't this trigger a trade war? What you're talking about here, these kinds of tariffs? And he said, look, we've got the leverage here. And if China responded to us that way, then their economy would collapse. They're dependent upon us. And really, that's what both sides would say. China's sitting there saying, look, we own $1.3 trillion of U.S. debt. We've got the leverage. I mean, they've got the nuclear option, when you think of it. They own all of that debt. Talk about currency devaluation. They could bring down the dollar in a heartbeat. These are just some of the tit-for-tat responses in this CNBC piece. What if China stops lending the United States money? It's already got $1.3 trillion in U.S. bills, notes, and bonds. What if they stop financing America's enormous debt? What happens then? Who has the leverage? That astronomical debt figure, by the way, it's projected to rise from 75% of America's GDP to 105% over the next decade. That's from the CBO. That's from Congress. And it's probably a conservative estimate. It's probably going to be higher. The way these leaders today spend, spend, spend. And then going back to the nuclear option, what if China decides to dump its holdings of all the U.S. government debt? You think the Fed Reserve can just go right on printing trillions and trillions of dollars when there's no nations out there funding the debt? Of course, that would lead to America losing its reserve currency status, and really, that's the only thing that's holding it all up right now. And look, there's all kinds of pressure coming from many different directions, challenging the dollar's role as the world's reserve currency. I thought it was amazing, just as I was preparing for this last night, I was reading through Tim Thompson's article from 24 years ago, You talk about leverage or lack thereof. Some of you that have followed the Trump for a long time will remember Mr. Thompson writing about economy, finance, the trade deficit, trade wars. And this just kind of, it was almost, I almost started laughing when I was reading this. He wrote in December 1992, in June of 1992, the U.S. trade deficit was $6.59 billion. Today, it's what each month? 30, 40, 50 billion? Mr. Thompson said the U.S. Also has a fiscal 1992 budget deficit of a record $290 billion. That was a record back then, $290. And under the current administration, President Obama, we've been running trillion-dollar deficits years and years and years. Trillion-dollar deficits. Mr. Thompson says, and the national debt is in excess of $4 trillion. He has an exclamation point. Today it's right around $20 trillion. And Mr. Thompson said in 1992, this is fiscal insanity. The leaders of this country continue in their very foolish fiscal ways, and then they blame others for their problems. That was 24 years ago. 24 years ago. Now, do you think 24 years on from that, that fiscal insanity, and looking at the fiscal insanity we're at today, how strong is our position in the world economy? The reserve currency status, it's keeping America propped up there. The fact that we can continue to borrow and borrow and borrow, or print and print and print. But once we reach the tipping point, forget about what it would do to China's economy. But what when the whole world goes south and everyone's looking out for their own? There's a tipping point that's coming. That's the thing. And when we reach that point, who will have the leverage? Certainly not going to be the United States. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
When you hear talk about a tough trade bill, remember that being tough on trade and commerce, the lifeblood of the economy, will have the worst possible consequences for the consumer and the American worker. First, it will drive up the price of much of what we buy. But worse than that, it could drag us into an economy-destroying trade war. I'm old enough to remember the last time a so-called tough trade bill passed Congress. It was called Smoot-Hawley, and it helped give us, or at least deepened, the Great Depression of the 1930s. Well, the way up and out of the trade deficit is not protectionism, not bringing down the competition, but instead, the answer lies in improving our products and increasing our exports. The government should work to create the conditions in which fair trade will flourish. We should be trying to foster the growth of two-way trade, not trying to put up roadblocks, to open foreign markets, not close our own.
That's President Ronald Reagan from 1987, referring back to the Smoot-Hawley Act in 1930. We've written a fair bit about that over the years at thetrumpet.com. That was the most destructive trade bill in history. The stock market had just crashed a few months before, and then this trade bill comes along. I mean, the world markets were going down, and the United States was looking out for its own. And what ended up happening is it extended what would have been, most economists say this, it would have been just a course correction for the stock market. And instead, it turned into a decade-long depression. Robert Morley, in his 2010 article at The Trumpet, "This Means War." He said, "Post-World War I industrial America, reeling from the effects of the stock market crash and subsequent job losses, erupted into protectionist fervor, riding a populist wave." Any of this sound familiar? He's writing about the history from 1929 and 1930. Protectionist fervor, riding a populist wave, he said. U.S. politicians imposed the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, one of the most draconian protectionist policies in American history. Well, the Americans saw it as, it's about time. It's about time we fight for our own. It's about time that we make this fair. It's about time that the playing field is leveled. But the way the other nations around the world saw it, they saw it as a declaration of economic war. They saw it as the start of a trade war. Robert Morley says foreign nations were outraged. Within 2 years, 25 countries had retaliated. See, that's what happens. If you know human nature, you know that's what happens. 25 countries had retaliated. U.S. and foreign trade took massive losses. America exported $5.24 billion in goods in 1929. In 1932, the total had fallen to just $1.6 billion. Overall, world trade had declined some 66% by 1934. It just plummeted. We better be careful when we talk about stiff tariffs and huge trade barriers. We better know our history. Furthermore, we better know what God says. I mean, why are we losing all of these manufacturing jobs? Ultimately, what is the problem? Well, you need to go into the United States and Britain and prophecy to really dig into that further. Maybe I'll get into that later on another show. It says in the 1930s, countries around the world defended and furthered their own interests, even when it meant undermining the economies of other nations. Before long, the economic malady began to have dramatic social and political consequences. Populations became frustrated. Extremist ideologies and policies entered the mainstream. In some instances, like Germany, radical leaders tapped the mass frustration to gain political leadership. This is Robert Morley writing in 2010. I mean, it's a fairly old article. But it's as if he's describing today. By the end of the decade, he's writing about the 30s, by the end of the decade, the mass frustration had begun to boil over. The Second World War erupted. Well, history is repeating itself. Trade war leads to a hot war. There's a dangerous scenario that's now developing in the world. I mean, here we've had, since the end of World War II, we've had this period of unprecedented prosperity, of free trade around the world. And now here we are, and we see trade barriers being erected. Nationalism is on the rise. This fervor for protectionism. History, as I say, is repeating itself. And do you think one political leader is going to come along and be able to change the system for the better? Let me just take you to Deuteronomy 28. This is a verse my father referred to, quoted, in his article from earlier this year, July 2016, a very important article, by the way. China is steering the world toward war. They are cheating. They are manipulating the currency. But Donald Trump's not going to be able to stop it. He isn't. Deuteronomy 28:52 says, "And he shall besiege you in all your gates until your high and fenced walls come down, wherein you trusted, throughout all your land. And he shall besiege you in all your gates, throughout all your land, which the Eternal, your God, has given you. God is punishing our nations. That's the message that's lost on the leaders in Israel today. The fact that those factories are empty today because of curses, not because of the Chinese or Mexico. Curses have set in. Here, the United States and Britain both just used to be the industrial giants of this earth, as Mr. Armstrong covers in U.S. and Britain. They controlled some 66 to 75% of all the world's resources. It's not like that today. Now, here's what my father says. This is in that article, July 2016. China is steering the world toward war. He says, you can already see this prophecy moving toward its fulfillment. He's speaking of Deuteronomy 28:52. He says, the European Union is moving into South America, making trade agreements that are taking business away from the United States. Russia and China are militarizing the most important trade routes traversing the Asian continent. He says, this prophecy is being fulfilled before our eyes. America's enemies are securing shipping lanes and creating economic alliances that will very soon enable them to choke off America's supply lines. That's where this is headed. I mean, they're talking about sea lanes there as well. But it's headed for the Great Tribulation. Jesus talked of it in Matthew 24. Daniel, of course, did too. And in chapter 12, let me just conclude over in Ezekiel 4. We've gone through this section a couple of times already this year. An important passage, for sure, because it talks about the beginning stages of the Great Tribulation. Ezekiel chapter 4, these first few verses. And then you get into chapter 5 and you see Israel's destruction. It's divided into thirds. This is the first third that we're talking about. Ezekiel chapter 4. Let me get over there myself. Ezekiel 4 and verse 1. The prophet Ezekiel says here, You also, son of man, take you a tile and lay it before you, and portray upon it the city, even Jerusalem, and lay siege against it, and build a fort against it, and cast a mount against it. Set the camp also against it, and set the battering rams against it round about. It says, moreover, take you unto you an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between you and the city, and set your face against it, and it shall be besieged, and you shall lay siege against it. This shall be a sign to the house of Israel. This will be a sign to the house of Israel. This refers primarily to the United States and Britain. And my father said in that article, this is the July trumpet, here is pictured a siege against the house of Israel. It is a prophecy that one-third of these nations will be destroyed economically and socially by a siege. Other prophecies show that this siege will cause an economic cataclysm that will develop into race wars and fighting for food and survival. I just think it's incredibly fascinating from a prophetic standpoint when you just see the way everything has been aligned these last many months. Even the reaction to Trump's election from last week, rioting, spilling into the streets, so much discontent. The left promising a lot more as we get closer to the inauguration. In their minds, in the minds of half of America, Donald Trump just embodies the racial division and strife and hatred that so many Americans see when they look at America. We've been all over this, of course. The war on police, the rioting going on in America's cities. So you have that, and then on the other hand, you look at this message, this anti-free trade platform on which Donald Trump preached from all through the campaign. And what God's talking about here in Ezekiel 4 is the coming economic siege and the social unrest My father says the United States and Britain are going to be left out in the cold as two gigantic trade blocks, Europe and Asia, mesh together and begin calling the shots in world commerce. These nations of Israel are going to be literally besieged, economically frozen out of world trade. That's where we know this is headed. That's why, as great as it might sound, as pro-American as it might sound, you know we've lost all leverage. We aren't holding the cards. There may be some short-term gains, as that one article brought out, but in the long term, we lose in a trade war. We lose. Sad to say, my father says in Great Again, America's problems are a direct result of America's sins. No political candidate is going to make America great again, no matter what people think. I'd like to see it happen, but it's not going to happen in this age. He says everyone will come to recognize that truth before much longer. God will make America great again in the world tomorrow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us at td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.